Mike Batham, and this is the second session with left-right brain orientation and a play activity of graph paper design. As a way of review, last night we talked briefly about the process of creative spirituality, and part of the story that I told about the daughter seeing and touching and embracing her grandmother, who had had a very creative life, we too are in the process of being able to see, to touch, and to embrace our own creativity. And we can do that in many ways. Part of it is by our own story, which I'm sure that many of you have been involved with. A metaphor, which is something that is really very much a part of my makeup, telling stories that relate or giving images that relate to my own personal story. To be able to be involved with the process of theory, which is more of the pondering, much like Mary pondered the birth of her son. The idea of play, being involved, using our various types of talents and abilities through the process of using our hands and the process of seeing with our eyes. Assessment, the kind of activity we're going to take part in today. And to leave open to the ability to have aha experiences. And some of what I'm saying might just be simple reinforcement for things that you've already known exist within you. And in other situations, some of this may be new. I would like to read from a book called The Eighth Day of Creation, a book that's been available here in the bookstore by Elizabeth O'Connor. We ask to know the will of God without guessing that God's will is written into our very beings. We perceive that will when we discern our gifts. Our obedience and surrender to God are in large part our obedience and to surrender to our gifts. This is the message wrapped in the parable of the talents. Our gifts are on loan. We are responsible for spending them in the world, and we will be held accountable. Though it may be seen that God leaves us and is not concerned with what we do with our lives, the parable makes it clear that this is not the case. Even though we feel that God is away a long time, the absent God, we perceive God's presence in the consequences of our actions. And I think as I spoke about the parable last night, I think that it was important to bring to light that I think part of the sins that are the most serious are not the kinds of sins that we think will be serious, the everyday problems that come up and we don't resolve. I think it's more a matter of when we're called to account for ourselves, that what we're being called to account for is that we did not use the giftedness of our lives to make our own lives fill in the puzzle pieces of the universe, but also to help other people come to terms with their own creativeness and their own giftedness, to be affirming people of ourselves in the things that we do, and also to affirm others in the things that they do. And this will come up later when I talk on the issue of dysfunction. One of the books that is really important to me is How Creative Are You? By Eugene Robseth. And in this book, the whole book actually is nothing but sort of data, information, and how to take assessments to find out and determine why you do the things the way you do. And the one that that I would like to concentrate on is the left-right brain orientation. Why and how do we use our brain, in what situations? And some of the questions are going to seem a little bit strange, but they will come out at the end to determine the kinds of things that we do. I would like to just read an introductory statement here, and then I've given you a piece of a graph paper, and I've given you a pen so that you can use those to take the assessment, and then the rolled up papers that I have here, I will release down. I've gotten very creative here myself so that we can all work this out rather quickly and easily. Recent scientific research shows that the two hemispheres of the human brain mediate and process different kinds of information and handle different kinds of tasks and problems. Our first inventory will determine whether you are right brain oriented, left brain oriented, or if you use the whole brain, both hemispheres, when dealing with facts, ideas, and issues. Now, the questions, you can see up here, obviously, I have questions 5, 6, and 7, and you're wondering where the first four are. Well, I'm simply going to read them here because they're very easy to follow, but the last three questions require putting down some of your own information out of the various categories, and so that's why those are up there. Otherwise, it'd be too hard to give you this assessment. Now, before I begin, I'd simply like to say an assessment is something for your own personal information. It has nothing to do with balance or to be graded against anybody else. So what you're figuring is totally for yourself, and it isn't right and it isn't wrong for anybody else. It's simply information for you. And I think that once you find out what your score will be, you'll have one of those kinds of aha experiences. You might say to yourself, I've always wondered about that, why I felt or did things in a certain way. And then later on, I talk briefly, I have a brain drawing up here, and we can go through figuring out what the left and the right brain and the left and right brain association is and how the responses fall into the different categories. Okay, so I'll simply read these, and the first four questions are rather simple. It takes a few moments for you to figure out how do I respond to that question. And the first four are certainly very interesting. Question number one. In auditoriums, movie theaters, lecture halls, etc., do you prefer to sit A, on the right side, B, on the left side, or C, in the middle? Now, before you answer that, I think I need to explain the best way to process this is to do your answers in columns from top to bottom, because we're going to have to do some addition later on. Your responses will be given in letter and number sequence. So if you put question one and say you're going to put your answers, stack them from top to bottom, because next to that, these letter values are going to be given a numerical balance, and you simply add those all the way up to get your score. So that I think I'd better explain to you before you start doing left to right instead of top to bottom. Okay, let me repeat the question then. In auditoriums, movie theaters, lecture halls, etc., do you prefer to sit A, on the right side, B, on the left side, or C, in the middle?
A D, don't care.
Or E, depends on the movie.
Again, A was the right side.
Pardon?
A was right.
A was on the right side, B on the left side, C in the middle. Okay, question number two. When responding to a question requiring some thought, do you A, tend to look to the left, B, tend to look to the right, C, tend to look directly at the person? I would probably say that that is a balance between left and right, and if you look up, you look directly ahead. You kind of have to feel for the questions as you go along, because there'd be too many. A, tend to look to the left, B, tend to look to the right, C, tend to look directly at the person. An alternate question to that would be something like, in a social, at a party, and you're close to someone and you're talking to them, do you stand one way or do you stand the other way or do you face them directly in front? So if you looked up, you're still facing them, so you have to kind of feel for the answer out of the question. Question three. Are you A, more extroverted, or B, more introverted? Or A, are you more open? Or B, are you more private? Okay, question four. Are you A, more of a day person? B, more of a night person? Or C, both equally? Okay, now you'll understand when I read the next questions, the next three questions, why I have them all written out in categories. Because you need to make some selections here.
Mike, could you just clarify for a second? Are we going down the page or are we going across?
No, you're going top to bottom.
Okay.
And then as I give you the letters, as you can read the letters, you pick out the letter and then leave a space to the right-hand side, because when I roll down the value systems for each of these, you pick the value out and then add the column down to the bottom and figure out your score.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Question number five. From the following list of characteristics and skills useful in work, identify four that you especially possess or are good at, and four that you find difficult. The easiest way of doing this is to designate good with G and difficult with D. Now, as you read down the list, and this is something that will help speed up the process a little bit, there are some key words in here that are repeated in different ways later on. So as you read through the list, you'll see catchwords that mean about the same thing. So some of these, like question five is A through Z. Actually, if you looked at it, it would only be through A through about Q, because some of the things are being said. They're trying to trick you in a little bit of a way. So as you read through the list, it's probably best that you pick out the four that you're best at, because we always like to think of ourselves as doing something. We like to think of ourselves as doing things in a good way. We don't like necessarily to look at the negative things, the things that we're not particularly good at. So if you can break it into two sections, pick out four things that you are particularly strong at, and then look back at it as things that might be weak. Is that clarifying enough at the moment? So you're picking out four that you're good at and four that you have trouble with.
And in putting our answers down, do we just, like, we put five and then we put A if that was our...
No, if you pick out persuading others, you put down E. And if you have trouble with motivating others, you might put out P. But then again, see, persuading others and motivating others is about the same thing. So you have to be careful about how you're looking down the list. And this question, number five, will probably take you the longest to figure out. Once you get the system down in your own mind, then six and seven will go a little bit quicker. Question number six. From the following list of words, check five that best describe you. So we only have one category this time, and we only have to pick five instead of eight. And on this particular question, people had trouble with understanding the concept of spatially and linearly. Linear is two dimensions, height and width, and spatial is three dimensions, height, width, and depth. In other words, seeing the concepts of the backsides of things, seeing the wholeness of problems or situations, where in a linear concept, it's straight across. You're only able to conceive of one answer, one possible direction. So seeing things spatially or three-dimensionally as opposed to two dimensions. So that will help.
Get to that. Four we pick?
Five. You are picking five. It's one of those ones that double up on you, so... Able to synthesize and a synthesizer are about the same thing. One who can pull together all things and make sense of it, or to edit information to make it understandable by all. Leadership ability. one who simplifies. Okay, we go on to question 7. From the following list of phrases, check 4 that most apply to you. I suppose this part of it now sort of looks like some kind of secret code. And we'll try and simplify it for you. Now, in the first questions, if you chose the letter A, you would give yourself a numerical value of 1, and you simply put it right next to that particular letter. Or if you chose B, you'd put in 10. If you chose C, you'd put down 5. And this pertains to questions 1, 2, 3, 4, and 4. You'd only choose 1 numerical value for each one of the questions. Then, as you go into 5, it becomes a little more difficult. You first have to pick out your letter, and then if you put down the letter, like if it was F and it was a good one, then you put down the numerical value. So you do it that way. Then 6, and then 7. At the end of that, then you total up your score. You simply add up, and then you'll be able to know in which category you fit according to your score.
Oh, I can't see the bottom of it. Okay, managed to get a Z in there. Okay.
Okay, we have some scores.
111.
We've got to add you.
Can I add it for me?
I haven't even finished going down.
Robert, you and I are real close than what it is.
Mm-hmm.
We're double.
Can't read my own mind, that's okay.
I guess
we
could figure that out.
Score.
What was your score?
112.
Okay. 90. Double dominant?
90.
Low double dominant?
Mm-hmm. Boy, if somebody scored 41, they really would be.
Now, I have a friend who is about a 40, a 41.
Is that right?
And he's really hard relate to because he's so analytical. It just drives him nuts. Yeah, he's just, I haven't seen him in a couple months. I saw him the other day walking down the street, and I'm just going along before I could even say hi, how are you. He's had a whole conversation with me in a minute and it's gone, and I'm left standing there just kind of reeling. How's your son? How's your daughter? Well, that's fine. Well, I'm getting married in 2 months. Well, I'll see you, bye. And it's just, you know, and this his brows are right about here, and he's just very, very layered, very left brain. And yet if somebody's 173, you're going to have this kind of thing, you know? Oh, I guess, oh yeah, I'm supposed to be doing my laundry and shopping, but oh, the world is so young, still out here. So, there are two extremes in the process of determining left brain orientation, left right brain orientation.
I'm a trial lawyer and I wish I could give these tests to prospective jurors. Mm.
It would be good to give this kind of exam to any kind of business or schools to determine where people are on the scale, because in taking this, there are three things I want to just discuss briefly. First of all, for the person who's taking it and they're concerned that they're about a 43 or 44 as in a left brain area, that's just where people are, and that's part of their makeup, and it's not right or wrong, it's just where you are. The second thing is that just we were discussing about whether it's prospective jurors or whether it's teachers or whether it's people in the business world, whatever. Anytime we have to deal with people, we have to deal with their makeup. And in so doing, if you can understand your own and you can hear where they're coming from, you have an understanding of whether they're left or right brain. You have an edge in understanding how to make the conversation flow so it's advantageous for both people. The third thing is that you can change your score. It's not fixed. It's sort of like a Myers-Briggs. A Myers-Briggs is a flow through life that as you grow and change and mature, your scores will change also. The same thing with left-right brain assessment. And I'm going to give you, as we finish out, I'm going to give you a little teaser type design project that's going to use, that requires that you use left brain thinking and right brain processing. And in the process of doing this particular project, you will come together and form a double dominancy. So you can change the process in some cases so that you're not always either left brain or not always right brain.
Is this that same old question, are children born this way or is the environment have a big impact?
That's a really good question. That kind of leads into the next comment I wanted to say was that in doing my thesis work on this subject, I gave exams to various groups. And I gave the exam or the assessment to young children. I gave it to some of my high school students, well, all of them actually, and then I did adults. And I found that 90% of young children up to about the age of 16 were double dominant. The thing that happened, well, and then the next phase was to give it to the adults, and most of them were left brain, about 90% were left brain. So my theory is that in the process of our growing and as we go through our family structures, as we go through school, as we go through business or through relationships or even in church, we are conditioned, particularly in this country, to think in one way. We are gently sometimes and then not so gently nudged to process and go in a particular direction, which for this country is normally left brain. Because business deals that way. We've got to have an answer now. President Hoover, who was a very wealthy man, he was a millionaire by the age of 30. He was a very productive engineer before he became president. He coined the phrase, the business of America is business. And that kind of set the trend, or began to set the trend, toward thinking high left brain. Linear qualities, not necessarily spatial qualities. Spatial qualities are that three-dimensional, looking at all issues. And that would be a right brain process. But it takes time. You sit around and think, well, I know, let's see, there's an answer here. What about over here? And then, you know, we've got a possibility over here. That would drive a left brain businessman crazy. We need an answer right now. Linear, point A to point B is a straight line. We got to do it, let's do it now. That's generally the tendency to move. Schools do the same thing. Got to hammer that education into them. Got to have the science, got to have the math, got to have the business, going on to college, going on to a job. So I think God intended for us, I'm standing on a chair. I think God intended for us in the beginning, in the creation, that we would be balanced. And I think in the process of our lives and discovering the journey that we're on, the spiritual journey that we're on, that I think we're being brought back into wholeness to be creative, but also to think on a logical plane at the same time. Okay. Last process I will talk about briefly, and this is my brain drawing, and I've drawn the left, what they call the left lobe and the right lobe, and in between each lobe of the brain, and I'm going to keep this, I'm not going to get scientific on you, I'll simply indicate that there are a number of connecting links, passageways that will cause us to move from left to right, and they call those, basically call those transmitters. And as they cross over, they are used specifically so that we can deliver messages from the left to the right side, back to the right side, to back to the left. and to balance. And as we use more and more of these transmitters, then we become more in the area of the double dominancy. We can process on the left side. We can process on the right side equally. And in some situations, where logically, where we need to have an answer right now, it's not to say that the left brain is not the right way to be, because we do require that we use that. But the right brain in the processing for long-range goals is also very important. And we'll kind of look at these as we work our way down. Left brain people are very logical. My friend whom I just described a minute ago, he's onto it like this. He can just look right through you, knowing that he's going to go to that point over there. And in the process, I'm more right-brained, and I want to just stand around and converse and be present to him, but I know he's got something else in mind. So while he's being very logical, I tend to be more intuitive. I'm kind of looking inside of him and saying, gee, why don't you just take it easy? Why don't you slow down, you know, and just process? This really bothers me. I haven't told him this, but, you know, that kind of disturbs my intuitiveness for him to be so doggone logical, and it's hard for me to be around him. The left side is very analytical, as I've described. The right side is more holistic. The left side is more sequential, and the right side is more gestalt. And I probably should explain that. Sequential, if my friend had to do a number of steps in a project and step three was left out, it would drive him nuts. Step one, step two, he can work through that very well. Step three is gone. He won't go any further until step three is resolved. And I could jump over step three because I've got more of a spatial feeling for it. And I say, well, come on, let's go, let's do this thing. And he, no, we have to stop and figure this out. Why can't I get step three? On the other side, the right side, gestalt is the part of therapy. Gestalt is taking information and simply repeating it back. If I was listening to your story and you're telling me something about yourself, I would simply reflect on that and give it right back to you again. So it's a continuous motion of giving information and feeding back the same bit of information. Now, too much of this, and you wouldn't want to talk to me much longer either. Because you'd say to me, gee, it's a beautiful day outside. And I'd say, it's a beautiful day outside. And you'd say, well, I think I'm going to go for a walk. And I'd say, well, you're going to go for a walk. So about that time, you're going, give me a break. So too much sequence and too much gestalt is going to be not very comfortable. Okay, left side, linear, that same thing, of seeing things in two dimensions, either horizontally or vertically or both, but not getting behind the surface of things, not wanting to see the backside. Nonlinear would be the area of more of a balance of three-dimensional quality. Left side, very definite yes-no. Black and white, no gray areas. It's very scary to get involved in between the yes-no. There are some basic religions that are very much involved in the yes-no theory, as opposed to the other side of...
And a lot of bureaucrats.
A lot of bureaucrats, right. The other side being very insightful. People not being afraid to deal with those things that may not have answers, that you may just simply want to reflect on. Possibilities, perhaps. But to talk to a yes-no person with some kind of insights or looking deeper into the issues without having a definite thing to hang on to is very scary for a left-brain thinking person. Convergent, one answer. Divergent, lots of answers. Now, the interesting thing, too, is that both sides are very thinking concepts. So there's a parallel between the two. That in the thinking area, you're dealing more in the central focus of a double dominancy. So thinking is very strong on both sides. But it's left side is thinking like this, and right side is more thinking like this. Rational on the left-hand side, non-rational on the right-hand side, and people give me a bad time sometimes when I'm into my non-rationality, particularly dealing with artwork, that they think that I'm not really making much sense. They can't understand the concepts or the feelings that I'm feeling particularly. So it's hard to be compatible with a left-brain person who is being very rational at the time. And rational tends to be sort of a quick draw. You know, it's right there all the time, and you can get gunned down by it. Whereas the non-rational person might pull the gun out and just kind of look at it and see what it's made of before they take a shot. Literal meaning, face value. Again, maybe if we took the face value of Scripture, that is the absolute meaning of it. For myself, though, I can get down on several different levels of Scripture to mean several different things. And I think that's the great thing about Scripture, is that one time you can read it, it doesn't have the same kind of value according to the situation you might be involved in. But a second time you might be in some kind of painful position, something that requires some thought processing, where that particular Scripture means an awful lot and it becomes strong food to chew on. Left brain people deal in realistic concepts, more of a face value, can't get into the fantasy side. And one of the things that I will talk about this afternoon is that fantasy is very important to getting to some area of creativity. We need to be into the fantasy. And fantasy kind of tends to be a dirty word in our culture, because it means, generally, it means sexual. Always it has something to do with sexual. The word fantasy of some type. So it has kind of a dirty connotation. Left brain people can be very judgmental. Right brain people can be very non-judgmental. Left brain people are very objective. Right brain people are very subjective. Feelings about things outside of themselves are very well expressed. Feelings for a right brain person subjectively, how am I feeling inside? How am I being affected by something? Left brain people, very mathematical. Right brain people, very artistic. Now this is going to come into focus. Both of these kinds of concepts, the mathematical and the artistic, are going to come into focus on this project that I'm going to give you. So those are two key areas in which we will focus when we start.
Haven't you got those last two reversed?
No, and I was surprised by that. Why would there be abstract on the left side and concrete more on the right side? Simply because a right brain person has eventually to pull things together. All of these things that are floating out here require concrete, and it refers back to the area of spatial quality, that eventually the right brain person will then have to pull things together. And that's the beginning. This concrete concept here is the beginning of the switch over to the left brain, and that's part of the connecting, the concrete and the abstract. The people can be very abstract on a linear plane. They can come up with concepts that require the left brain person in their abstractness and in the concept, and this is very close together here, the mathematical and the abstract. A lot of scientists are working in the mathematical abstract area, and a lot of artists are working in the artistic and the concrete, being able to see the whole concepts of things. And these last two categories are the initiators that make the transmitters work, that pull the information back and forth together. You know, when I first looked at that too, I thought, you know, that doesn't make any sense. But after doing more and more reading, then it began to pull together very clearly. And what is happening here is that the left brain scientists who are dealing here in the mathematical, as they look beyond the world concept, they're seeing things out of space, out in space, and they're putting abstract concepts together, and they're coming to terms with the artistic and the concrete. They're saying things like, you know, our earth has limitations. And that's an abstract thought for a left-brain person. They're saying things, you know, we can't keep using the world as we have been doing in the past. And that's their initiation to get the right-brain person to pull these concepts together and meet a happy medium. Those kinds of things are pulling together. I guess some of the other things they're saying too is as people go into space and look back at the world, there is a new concept of the God and the universe and the cosmos as well. Mathematicians coming up with concepts of the artist in the use of scripture and in the use of the belief system and in the understanding of God. So that's some basics as to the left and right brain orientation. Now before I go away with this, I'm sure that most of you have either taken or are aware of the Myers-Briggs personality assessment. There are two other areas that I guess I'll have to use the word test to find out who you are. One is the Enneagram, and the Catholics are very active in this area of the Enneagram. Now, where the Myers-Briggs is a flexible personality assessment, the Enneagram is a non-flexible assessment of who we really are and why we act the way we do, our basic core of ourselves. And there are 9 categories based on the Sufi Indian structure. It's formed in a circle. I won't go into it much more, but if you're interested in finding out personality types and why we act the way we do on a non-changeable order, this is the book to look at, called The Enneagram for Self-Discovery. The second book is a book by Carol Pearson. It's called The Hero Within, and it's the six archetypes that we live by. And those six are the wanderer, the martyr, the warrior, the innocent, the orphan, and the magician. And how we travel in our lives, how we travel through these six categories. And there is an assessment at the end. You can determine your own examination and find out who you are, where you are, and the journey through the six categories of life structure. So those 2 additional books. And if you're interested in the other one that I've been using, it's called How Creative Are You? And you can self-examine yourself to death. It's got every category you ever thought was possible listed in this book. And you walk out, got yourself all programmed and ready to go, at least for a while anyway. Okay, now I'm gonna give, you've used up your graph paper. I'm gonna give you one more piece of graph paper. I'm going to get out the rest of these pens because they'll become...
You can turn it over. Did
you okay. Have... All right. Turn it over.
Sally,
why?
Could I have one?
Oh. No, I'm sorry.
There's a pen down there.
Yeah, there's lots of pens. Now, the pens are different colors, and you may want to use different colors in your project here. Now, this project can be begun here and played with as much as you want to at a later time. I want you to section off an area that encompasses 5 square units, 5 across the top. Now, probably the easiest way to do this is just to work from the upper left hand corner and think right, much as like as we would read a book. Upper left to upper right, and then work your way down. So I want you to figure out 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 across the top, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 down the side, and that will give you a square unit, a 5 by 5.
Are you talking about using these little squares or making bigger squares?
Well, I'm going to talk about that in just a second. I want you to just section off five by five, so it'd be 25 square units.
Oh, the whole paper?
No, just the upper, I see you've got the whole, let's see. Just take 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 across the top, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 going down the left-hand side, and then square that off. We're just working with a box shape.
Oh, just one?
Just one.
Okay, I thought you should take a whole
no,
paper.
No, not the whole paper. Okay, now the reason I've sectioned off five, and five across the top and five down, is because that gives you one that is immediately in the center. So that you have a symmetrical being here. You have two units going from top to bottom on either side of that center, or two units going across on a horizontal plane with this one in the center. So that if you have a central focus that looks much like a tic-tac-toe board, you can work corner to corner, you can work top to bottom or side to side, or on either side, either vertically or horizontally of this center point. Now that center point is just simply to focus you in that you have a central focal point. And you can spin a design from that central point any way you wish, or you can work corners to corners, or you can do something down the side. Now just to give you an example, now what we're doing right now is I'm giving you a particular thing you have to stay within. You have to stay within that particular unit. So what's that? That's left brain. You think, how am I going to figure this here? So I'm giving you some rules to begin with. So the rules, you're standing there and you think, I've got to have some rules. Suddenly you're going, left brain. And then, well, I'm going to create something that looks really nice out of this rules. You're going over the right brain. And as you begin to pull this together, you kind of pull yourself upright into a double dominancy. So you're having to work both sides of the brain to figure out this particular assignment. Okay, I think I'll just start out by saying I'll put some vertical lines on the corners here. Maybe I want this to pull into the center a little bit more. And then I can maybe connect these. Now as you begin, we deal with another concept. We're dealing with two and three dimensional quality. We're dealing with linear, which is flat, and that's left brain. But as you begin to make connecting lines, your eyes will begin to play tricks on you. And suddenly we have two boxes turned on in by connecting a couple lines. All of a sudden we're on the right side of the brain again, because you can look right up inside of this and you can see a box shape, and that's three dimensional. So you're looking at this in the round. So your head's suddenly going real fast, banging back and forth. It isn't actually doing that, but the action is taking place up there, because suddenly you see this on a flat surface, and then all of a sudden you can see, well, no, there's space in between those. So that's another concept, and that's spatial quality at the same time. Now, as you devise your shapes, then you have the option also of using some of the other pens to say, well, you know, I think I'd like to have this side over here shaded in, and I think I'd like to shade in this side. And I don't think the center works yet. Maybe there's something I can do here. Maybe I want lines to run across. Maybe have a big X in the center. Now, what you're doing is designing this consciously. You're working on this to develop your theme and your idea. So you're doing a lot of sticking to the rules, because this is the area I've defined for you to work within. But at the same time, as you build your concepts, you're thinking right brain, you're building spatial qualities. And as you look at it, you say, well, I really like that. So you leave that design as is. The next step for you to do is to take that same design and move it over to the next five sections and repeat the same thing. And then you repeat it on the bottom section again, and you repeat it a fourth time, one more time. Now, as you do that, something else begins to happen.
You don't know what this is going to look like when you double it over here. You don't know what's going to happen here on these end sections as these design concepts are put together. And as you see the changes taking place, you're creating additional designs that you didn't think were possible. And as that happens, you suddenly think, wow, look what happened here. And in a lot of our life activities, in dealing with situations and dealing with problems, sometimes the answers come by something that you didn't think was possible. By you playing around with ideas up here, you arrive at a decision that is not only the best decision, but is one that says, wow, to yourself, gosh, here I was dealing with things out here, and yet the answer came some other way. A lot of that happens. I pick up a lot of new art assignments just by simply observing what other students are doing with projects, and they come up with some different idea of creativity that I say to myself, wow, that's pretty nice. And then I ask them questions, well, how did you do that? They tell me, then I incorporate that in my lesson plans to initiate as a new assignment. Because sometimes I just run out of assignments. There's nothing left out there. And I think, oh geez, what am I going to do now? I've run out of assignments. I got to give a new assignment next week. What the heck am I going to do? And suddenly here's a student that has the next project. And it happens out of a process of accidental processing. So you're going to concentrate on the first unit here of five, and then you're going to repeat it in the next five, and then one below. So you'll have one big unit instead of four separate ones. Now, I need to show you an example so it makes it a little clearer for you.
You know, for any lady or man who has ever made a quilt, patchwork quilt, what you're doing, it happens all the time. You make your little quilt box of little things, and then you put them together, and you've got stars, and you've got all kinds of things.
It's that energy that brings new life. And to do it in an art project, to expand that onto something that's really important in our lives. I heard in the news driving over here that scientists somewhere, I think it was in California, no, New Mexico, scientists have come up with a process and what they call an arrestor for the AIDS virus in animals now. And they cautioned everybody, said, now we've got an arrestor and it stopped the virus in animals. But at least here's somebody that's gotten an aha experience. Somebody, and I'd like to been in the sharing part of this, is how did they come around, how did they arrive at that? Was it concentrated work? Was it left brain? Or did something happen by accident? And I think a lot of things happen by accident to derive great achievements. Okay, now I need to get you going on this. Okay, you know, I've brought several students assignments. Okay, now this one is based on four units. If everybody can kind of squeeze in here. Let me think about this a second. One, two, three, four. So they're dealing with four instead of five. One, two, three, four. Okay, so there's four units of a design that they have worked on consciously using the rules and their left brain processing to come up with this particular design. And then as they made the shapes in free form and put the colors in, they began using their right brain. Okay. And as you make your designs, take advantage of the white of the paper as being one color, and then use your other colors to help bring out the spatial quality. Here you've got, it looks like a flight of stairs either going upside down or right side up. Using dark and light, red being a warm color, blue being a cool color, they go well together. Okay, so suddenly we expand it into the next four. And this student did it in reverse. But look what happens. There was no idea that that would happen, or that you'd have two blocks there. Okay, suddenly the design is expanded and becomes one whole bigger unit. And look what happens here. Here you get a diamond shape. Here you get a block effect over here. something that was not known when that person started that design.
It looks very Indian.
Yeah, there's all kinds of qualities. And then zoom, you expand it, and you've got a whole pattern.
Now there's your quilt.
Of design shapes. Now that would make a great quilt design project. Mm. Okay, that's one idea. Okay, here's one that's a unit of five, which you'll be working with. Not particularly exciting as far as being original. Blocked out in red, black, and blue with light areas in between to keep them divided. But suddenly, expand that again, and you formed a diamond in the center. Expand that again, and you have a star in the center. So there's all kinds of interesting, and then you have your repeating design like this. And it's fascinating that the students I thought would be terribly bored with this whole process. It was delightful. It was 30 kids in a classroom and they're ninth graders, and absolutely quiet. I mean, just walk around. I say, would somebody say something? They're down there. They're working on this diligently. You can just see their brains going, working overtime. Okay, here's one concept there. There's the next one. And we have an exchange that works together here. So the design flows from one to the next. Increase that. There comes your diamond. And then you have your patterns all pulled together. And then the student got very free with the creative process and left those spaces open there and formed a cross in the center.
Hmm.
Now, I gave this same assignment to I have an advanced graphics class, and they were working on a stationary design. I gave them the same project, only instead of filling everything in the center, I had them do stationary. I had them do a border design, and then the center part of it would be the stationary, and they were to do two of them, and an envelope as well. One was to turn in, the second one was to write to a friend of theirs or to a relative and simply say, I found this stationery, although they'd created it. And there were a number of relatives who wrote back, where'd you get that stationery? I want to buy some. It's so neat. Blah, 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 blah. So it was effective. Okay. One more. Now this makes maximum use of white space. Just a simple block. Again, here's your center focus that I talked about. We simply used little squares and created a cross and then balanced it with two red on the side. Now, in creating the cross this way, it also created sort of a box shape in the middle. Expand that again, and you get sort of a fat shape in the center. Expand that one more time, and you have your expanded designs pulled all the way out.
Mm.
Now, when I first started giving this kind of exercise, there was a man in the audience that I know quite well, a friend of mine who went through the same graduate program, but he's had a terrible weight problem, and I gave this assessment, a project right before lunch. He was so engrossed in it that he didn't go to lunch. And we jokingly said, well, now we figured out your new diet program. But he wouldn't eat. He just kept continually working out this design. And when he finished, he took it down to a frame shop and had it framed. He was so into the process of... So I'll just let you play around with some design shapes and make use of the different colors. I think there's five different colors. The best possibilities would be to use light colors against dark colors. And if you leave the page of part of the design page white, use a dark color next to the white. It seems to work best that way.